This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NS&I, giving you 100% security for your savings.
A very warm welcome to This Is Money and Share Radio podcast in partnership with NS&I. I'm Georgie Frost. Joining me in the studio is editor Simon Lambert, consumer affairs editor Lee Boyce, and special guest development editor Rich Browning from the financial website of the year. And it's a particularly warm welcome to our third annual Christmas taste test. Yes, it is back. Over the next hour, the team will attempt to talk money matters such as shared appreciation mortgages, a holiday Brexit tax, and supermarket price wars as they munch their way through a veritable feast of festive favourites. Who among Waitrose, Tesco, Lidl, and our wild card offering will win out on taste and price in a completely unscientific, pointless bit of seasonal fun? There are other supermarkets available, though still not where I live. First, good morning, gentlemen. A very Merry Christmas to you all. In case you'd forgotten, here's a little reminder of what happened last year.
What we should do is agree here that the only winner tonight was Christmas.
And the loser was definitely Waitrose.
And the loser was definitely Waitrose. The only loser was Waitrose, the only winner was Christmas. And Dave Lewis, if you're listening to this, you're on your way back, my friend. You're on your way back.
I was so surprised at the price. So in that, I'm going to ask you individually. Simon, for you, would it change the way you shop, Tesco or Lidl? Or Waitrose, indeed?
Do you know what? I am disadvantaged by the fact that I do have a Lidl near me, but it's a walk away and you can't park there, and I reckon Lidl's the kind of place I'd want to lug a load of shopping back from. But we get our groceries delivered by Tesco, and I'm really into the online shopping experience nowadays, the not having to bother going to the shop.
So you mix it up a bit, but in terms of this one...
I'd go Lidl. It's Lidl? Cheaper. It's equally as good, and it was slightly cheaper.
Lidl? Lee?
Drink Carver at Christmas? Oh, God, it's all about the champagne. What are you talking about?
If I was out of this, definitely
go to Lidl, wouldn't you? I mean, there's not much in Lidl and Tesco price-wise, but... You know, if I'm going to save a couple more quid at Lidl, I'm going to go to Lidl if it's got similar quality stuff.
And for you?
I think if I'm going to buy processed food in future, I'd probably go to Lidl.
That's the spirit. That's the spirit, Rich. For everything else of this Christmas day test?
Quarter of the local market is just the best.
Okay, so it's Lidl 2, local market.
Yeah, it's nice.
One, but in terms of this taste test, next year we'll bring in the local markets.
It was definitely Lidl. I think if Lidl could organise their car parking.
Okay, I'm afraid I've got a confession. Still no local market, Rich. I lied to you last year. Nor, Lee, do we have champagne budgets and all that. We do have something of a wild card pick. All will be revealed anon. But we've gone with the same three supermarkets. Last year's winner on taste and price, Lidl, representing the German discounters. The most improved, Tesco, our middle-of-the-road pick, Dave Lewis. You may have been on your way back in 2015, but has that continued through 2016? And then there's the middle-class housewives' favourite, Waitrose, representing the posher pound in your pocket. So served up alongside four courses of Christmas goodness is a feast of financial fun. For starters, we got a swathe of economic data this week. The cost of living has started to rise with inflation jumping to a two-year high, just as we warned this year could be the last of cheap Crimbo dinners.
This year will be more expensive than last year, but I think it will be cheaper than next year. It does look like food inflation is going to continue to rise.
Retail spending also up, thanks in part to good old Black Friday. Unemployment figures down, holding steady at 0.25%. We got no move whatsoever on the base rate of interest this week from the Bank of England. Not so on the other side of the pond.
We continue to expect that gradual increases in the federal funds rate will likely be sufficient to get to a neutral policy stance over the next few years.
So that sent the pound even lower, impacting on our holidays. So as we quaff Prosecco, we find out how one tour firm is hitting holiday goers with a £50 Brexit tax. What impact Brexit on house prices? So far, so steady. But watch out, we're hearing for 2017. So for our main course, alongside the sprouts, the cranberry sauce and the turkey derivatives. Just to annoy me, we compare house price reports and crystal ball gaze. Plus, take a look at where in Britain are the latest property hotspots.
It doesn't matter where you're from. You wanna work, then come along. The station's just got a new floor, and the motorway runs by your door.
We have a side dish of This Is Money's latest crusade. This time it's shared appreciation mortgages. And finally, they tuck into Lee's favourite mince pies. They break down what's been another difficult year for the supermarkets. Who are the winners? Who are the losers? So, gentlemen, a very good morning to you all. The question I have is quite simply, what foodstuff today are you most looking forward to trying? And what are you least looking forward to? So we have Stilton Prosecco, cranberry sauce, sprouts, turkey derivatives, mince pies. And we also have your waiter, Tom. A very good morning to you, Tom. He's my producer. He's your waiter for the day. He'll be explaining the scoring system. But Simon, good morning.
Good morning.
Your food stuff, your festive food stuff that you're most looking forward to trying this morning.
The food stuff I'm most looking forward to trying this morning is the turkey, because as is traditional in this test, it's not real turkey, is it? It's not real turkey, is it? It's turkey ham, isn't it?
And if you're lucky, Simon.
I'm hoping to guide any of our listeners out there who are going to be eating turkey ham at Christmas lunch as to which one is the best. Joking aside, I think that I'll go with the Stilton. I think I'd like the Stilton the most, and I think you know exactly what I'd like the least.
Sprouts?
Yeah, that's true. And you know that because last night you were tweeting me pictures of Brussels sprouts.
My flat absolutely stinks of Brussels sprouts.
And my comment was that they made me come over all Nigel Farage. A real dislike of Brussels.
I did appreciate the joke, Simon. Very good. I'm expecting something similar from you, Lee, about mince pies, because you're not a big fan of those, are you?
God, I hate mince pies. I mean, what are they all about? They're just absolutely disgusting. But with a lack of sausages wrapped in bacon, that would be my number one choice of trying Christmas food. I'm going to say Prosecco. Let's see if it can win me round for my champagne snobbery.
Carver or Prosecco? I wasn't sure. I got it wrong. I thought you said you preferred Prosecco last year, and then I re-listened to it.
Well, the thing is, though, you can get good bottles of champagne for a tenner in Lidl, so...
All right. Enough of that.
Like, bias us before the test already begins.
I know. Honestly, Rich, for you, I'm sorry, I lied. I couldn't make it down to the local market. We did have a wild card offering, which I'm very excited to reveal to you a little bit later what that might be. But for you, what are you most looking forward to and least looking forward to?
Well, if we're not going to be joking about this, I think I'm going to go for most looking forward to the cranberry sauce.
Okay, good one, yeah.
I didn't know there were different types.
So, it depends where you go. I can't account for the ingredients of them, but apparently so.
So, wow, yeah, bring it on.
But there is all joking. This is what it's all about.
Right.
Rich.
Well, so, I discovered this year the only reason I think people don't like Brussels sprouts is because when they were little boys, they tried to fill their nostrils with them.
I was about to educate you there with actually, there's a genetic, I don't think I threw this together. I mean, there was a lot of research that went into this show, Rich. Actually, it's a genetic thing, by the way. Yeah. The reason you don't like sprouts is passed through your genes for the bitterness taste. So there you go. Tom, you are our waiter.
It's on a serious level.
This will set the tone for the rest of the hour. Tom, you're going to explain to us the scoring system, please.
Yes, if you look in front of you, you'll each have a scorecard with all of the festive foods you're going to be trying today on it. Each food, you're going to have four different versions from different shops labelled A, B, C and D. For each one you try, you just got to number it. One is going to be your favourite and number four is going to be your least favourite. At the end, I'm going to tot up all the scores and we'll see which is our winners.
Did everyone get that?
Yeah, makes total sense.
Yeah, great. Total sense.
Excellent.
On digital radio across the UK and online, this is Share Radio.
Sort of switched off after about 10 seconds because I'm not part of this. I am your referee in the middle. Welcome to This Is Money and Share Radio podcast in partnership with NS&I. I am Georgie Frost, and joining me in the studio, we have got editor Simon Lambert, consumer affairs editor Lee Boyce, and special guest development editor, web guru Rich Browning from the financial website of the year. A very warm welcome to you all. So as we digest a swathe of economic data out this week, notably inflation figures, unemployment and interest rate moves or not, the gents are being offered their starter. So soon to be in front of you, Stilton cheese. Granted, I understand they usually come at the end of the meal, but just go with this one, will you? So while the gentlemen tuck in, write down their winners, here's some fun Stilton facts with Annie.
There are just 6 dairies in the world licensed to make blue Stilton cheese. Stilton takes its name from the village of the same name in Cambridgeshire, where a pressed, cooked cream cheese of that name was first made and sold. Stilton is a protected name cheese and, by law, can only be made in three counties, of Derbyshire, Leicestershire and Nottinghamshire. Candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
So there was Annie there with some fun Stilton facts as I inform the gents that actually one of them is not really Stilton. It's near enough. So this week we were told to enjoy Christmas dinner because it may well prove to be the cheapest you'll see in a while. Despite the fall in the value of the pound, inflation not yet fed through to our shopping baskets yet. Here's data expert Lorraine Hudson from Mintec.
Over the last 6 to 12 months, an awful lot of food commodity prices have risen, partly due to the fact that we've had reduced pricing for some time, but also because of currency effects after the EU referendum result. Some prices have risen over Christmas, but we are kind of expecting that this could be the cheapest Christmas for next year or maybe even the year after. We expect to see price inflation to continue this year and next year. We've had like a good few years of low inflation, food inflation. Lots of the important commodities have fallen in price, but they all now seem to be picking up. This year will be more expensive than last year, but I think it will be cheaper than next year. Retailers and manufacturers obviously don't like to pass costs on to customers wherever they can. And here at Mintec, we try to help with that and be the voice in between to keep prices low. You know, it does look like food inflation is going to continue to rise.
Well, that was data expert Lorraine Hudson from Mintec there. We're finding out a bit more about inflation, but a quick jump over to Simon there. You're tasting your Stilton. Any thoughts initially there?
Yeah, one of them isn't Stilton.
Okay, yeah, great. I did point that out.
Yeah, no, that's fine. It's quite akin to Stilton, though, actually. It's not that far off. I would say number B. Letter B is my winner. Letter C, cheese letter C, even the editor of financial website who can't do letters and numbers. C comes in second, A comes in third, and propping up the pile is D, the non-Stilton option that actually does taste pretty good.
All right. Well, you're doing it down because it's not Stilton, but it does taste pretty good. It's purely on
yeah,
taste, chaps.
It loses against the others on the Stiltonness.
Had I not told you?
The very essence of Stiltonness. Right. Had you not told me, I would have realised because it doesn't look like Stilton. I mean, it's a blue cheese, but it doesn't look like Stilton.
OK, we don't need to run through your exact 1, 2, 3, 4, but any tastes and flavours getting through? Obviously, the non-Stilton flavour is probably coming through rich, loud and clear for you. What stands out for good or for bad?
I like A the best. I suspect it might be the cheapest. It's quite sort of cheaply creamy.
I can say is I've no idea. Lee, to you, ever so your thoughts?
Yeah, it's definitely B. That is a proper Stilton. It's got a lovely strong note on the palate. It's really nice. Washed down with some port by a fireplace, that would be lovely.
Could do with a bit of fresh chilli as well with it. Fresh chilli and blue cheese goes together perfectly.
Tom, you're listening. All right, well, we'll be totting up those scores, but we got inflation figures. But what pushed inflation to a two-year high of 1.2%? Rising prices for clothes, motor fuels and things like hotel and restaurant charges. Here's Peter Cumley, inflation expert and author of Inflation Matters.
The stuff that's really driving the inflation rate higher is petrol prices. And to a lesser extent, we're beginning to see a bit of the Brexit effect with the higher price of sterling. What one's got to remember is the backdrop of where we were this time last year. Crude prices sort of heading below $30 a barrel around about this time of year. The price at the pumps was heading down to about £1. We've got the absolute opposite trend going on at the moment, and who knows how much above 55 they will go. But I suspect that we will see petrol pump prices towards about 120 in January. That's almost 20% higher than they were this time last year. And that alone adds about 0.7, 0.8 to the inflation rate with absolutely nothing else going on. So I think, you know, Mark Carney's predictions of inflation heading back up to 2% will come to fruition probably at some point early in next year, particularly if this oil price carries through.
So inflation up to retail spending 0.2%, thanks largely to Black Friday. Then came the job figures this week, didn't they, showing unemployment had fallen to a 10-year low. Only Germany and the Czech Republic have a lower rate than the UK's 4.8% within the EU. However, a number of people claiming job seekers' allowance was up. Here's our ONS reporter, Laurie Laird.
That was up 2,400 in November, and that was after a big rise of more than 13,000 in October. Now, the claimant count has actually now risen 8 of the past 9 months, so that looks like job growth, the heady job growth that we've seen over the past couple of years, maybe at the very least slowing down. Now, the question is this because of a slowdown in the economy, or is this because we're an economy that's bumping up against full employment, and it's too early to tell what the reason for that might be.
Okay, then, we got no change to the base rate of interest from the Bank of England, in contrast to what's going on the other side of the pond with the Fed. So, Simon, lots and lots to get through. You were looking forward, though, first to the Stilton round. Are you particularly okay with that? You know,
it's good.
Does it feel
good.
Like a satiated?
I'm impressed.
Yeah?
Okay. I'm happy, yeah. I need to stop pieing cheese into my face is what I need to do.
Well, I didn't notice that. That's why I mentioned it. Yeah. But I thought you've got a fair few rounds to go, so pace yourself there, Simon. But tons of figures out. So if you could, try and pull them together for us. So we've got inflation, sterling unemployment figures, spending, interest rates. What is the picture telling us about the state of the economy, I guess, now and going forward?
Well, if you look at inflation is going up for two reasons. Firstly, it's to do with the fact that the way the annual inflation rate is calculated is it's kind of the sum of the price movements over the last 12 months. So as price falls a year ago drop out, inflation goes up anyway, which is always slightly difficult to get your head round because it can be that the price hasn't actually moved that much, but because it fell a year ago, that means that inflation's going up. You've got that effect, but then also you've got the effect of the fall in the pound filtering through. So we're already seeing some price rises coming through. We're seeing shrinkflation in other places, you know, things getting smaller. That's been well documented. But then one of the big factors, of course, is the oil price. And the oil price has basically shifted up. The price of petrol has gone up. And as that comes into the equation, that has the power to move inflation up quite a bit. So we've seen inflation in this country go up to 1.2%. Now, the Bank of England has very unlikely to raise interest rates due to the fact that inflation has gone up to 1.2%. Because for a start, the target is 2%. And it looks ahead. And it has said that it thinks inflation will go above 2%. But the Bank of England is very good at looking through the inflation figures, looking through temporary factors. And so it has said this is basically going to be a temporary factor, maybe in a year's time, due to the fall in sterling. It's not going to put too much emphasis on that. And so it's going to keep rates steady to try and support the economy. And we've got the whole Brexit thing going on. We haven't actually, you know, invoked Article 50 yet. And then we've got 2 years in the negotiations. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Economic data has been pretty good so far, but, you know, nothing's actually happened yet. On the other side of the pond, you have the Americans, where basically what was meant to happen if Donald Trump got elected was the world would fall apart. The Fed would
There's
never...
still plenty of time, Simon.
Yeah. I mean, he's not president yet. Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that Donald Trump will not make the world fall apart. I mean, if I look at a man who's got a strong chance of making the world fall apart, Donald Trump's up in my top five. But that didn't happen. No. Instead, the markets have gone up. And what the Fed, you know, the equivalent of the Bank of England over in the US, the Fed really doesn't like stock markets falling. We've seen this over the past, you know, 7 or 8 years. The market collapses, the Fed goes, oh, we're going to help you out. So it would have raised interest rates more by now if stock markets hadn't have kept, you know, having wobbles. If we'd have had a wobble post-Trump, it's highly unlikely the Fed would have raised rates this month, which they really wanted to do because they really wanted to get another interest rate rise in this year because they didn't manage a single one up until now. They were expected to do maybe two or three at the start of the year. Instead, the markets didn't have a wobble over Trump. The markets have gone up. Everyone's gone, whoa, okay, everything's great. Trump's going to cut taxes. He's going to increase spending. That's seen as inflationary. It's going to push up inflation in the States. The Fed have raised interest rates now because they say if they do it now and they do it gradually, they won't have to do it sharply. And as long as rates go up gradually and slowly, that's a good thing. It's only if they suddenly go up like a hockey stick kind of thing that it causes a problem. So over there, they've raised rates. And on both sides of the pond, unemployment is relatively low. Things are looking okay for now. The outlook there is for more growth. The outlook here is for concerns over Brexit.
OK, for now, Lee, is the key there. The sort of Brexit hanging over us, some suggesting inflation could rise to 4%, fears of a cool down in the labour market, and markets may be going up, rates may be going up in the States. But what's happening to the pound over here?
Well, that sort of Brexit might be a sword that's hung in the air for about 10 years, if you listen to what's going on at the moment, because it doesn't feel like anyone in any kind of authority knows what is actually going to happen and how Brexit's actually going to play out. So that sword could be a mighty heavy sword that is just there in the sky for quite a long time. In terms of inflation at the moment and the fears of it going up to 4%, a lot of it will be linked to the pound. And, you know, the pound has fallen significantly in the aftermath of Brexit. But in the last month or so, it's recovered a little bit against the euro especially. So that has cooled some of the fears. In fact, the bank even said in the week, because of sterling now looking like it might be improving a little bit, it's still going to probably overshoot the target they've got. But it may, you know, sort of cool that down and it won't go up as quickly as possible. I think the key to it all is oil prices. I mean, if we think back to the financial crisis, oil hit sort of, you know, $120, $130 a barrel, dollars a barrel. At the moment, it's about $50, $60. At the start of the year, it was at about $30 a barrel, and that's why we saw those massive drops at the pump. If that continues to go because of the OPEC stuff we were talking about last week, we could start seeing inflation continuing to sort of nudge ahead. And if we're talking about just a small nudge each month, it's going to start hitting 3-4%. And a big loser in that, as we've seen, this seems to be a common theme throughout the year, are savers, because savers are having a real problem finding accounts that beat inflation. And the more inflation goes up, the more your money's getting eaten into over the years.
Well, isn't the reality, Rich, this is probably going to hit everyone, savers, borrowers, the jams, as we like to say. I mean, the numbers, the stats, they tell half a story, don't they? But you speak to people every day, you hear from them every day, they're on the website. What are they telling you?
There's half of them are very, very angry about something that nobody quite understands. I think, you know, over the next year, this kind of economic uncertainty is going to affect everybody. And I don't think we can expect a change in the base rate in this country for another year or so. I think Georgia's going to win Eurovision. You heard that here first. but I don't think there's any good news for savers in the coming months, I'm sorry to say.
I don't know where to go with that from there, but do you know where I'm going to go? I'm going to do a quick roundup of the starter and ask everyone to please give me your favourite Stilton, because we're going to take it away and bring the wine course. Oh, yes, it's got its own course in my household. Simon, for you, your winner for Stilton.
B.
B, and your loser.
D.
I write this down like I'm doing it, but I'm going to do Tom to do it. Lee.
Same. B and D.
B and D. Mm-hmm. You can do something else. You don't have to follow what he says.
Well, I know he pays
just
the bills.
Oh, all right. just saying. For you, Rich.
A, best. D, worst, sadly.
On digital radio across the UK and online, this is Share Radio.
Righto, it's time to crack open the bubbles. Not champagne, I'm afraid, Lee, but Boris's tipple of choice.
Not only do we buy more German cars than anybody else, we drink more Italian wine than any other country in Europe. 300 million litres of Prosecco.
Prosecco, indeed. Here's Annie again.
Prosecco. It's the UK's favourite sparkling wine, overtaking champagne for the first time last year. Approximately 150 million bottles of Italian Prosecco wine are produced annually. Other than Italy, the top three markets for Prosecco are the UK, Germany and USA.
We have Prosecco in front of us. Well, it's out of a wine glass, I'm afraid. But at least it's not a plastic cup. I think you were moaning about that last year, probably. So if you are heading to Italy, or indeed anywhere, you will be facing pricier trips next year, thanks to, yes, you guess it, Brexit uncertainty, sterling depreciation, rising oil prices and ongoing political uncertainty. Now, that's according to 80% of travel firms surveyed by online travel firm Travelzoo. A fifth say it could rise by as much as 15 to 20%. Now, one travel company has already hit customers who've booked with a £50 Brexit tax. Now, Lee, this is your article. Mm-hmm. What did you find out?
Well, Travelzoo, who are an online booking agency, so they've got, you know, ears to the ground, basically, to forward know what's going to happen. And what agents are telling them, travel agents across Britain, basically, is to brace yourself for more expensive holidays next year. It could be as much as 20% more expensive, especially for the popular spots. So Spain, France, all going to go up, and they're for the reasons that you have just mentioned, and actually for the same reasons that inflation looks like it might be nudging up. Oil prices, so it'd be more expensive for planes to fly. Sterling has crashed. We did a story a couple of weeks ago about how much it's crashed against pretty much every world currency, and there's a couple that it hasn't, and one of those was Egypt, and you struggle to get out there at the moment because most of the airlines have stopped flights there. And there's just lots of things going on that it's going to make holiday more expensive next year. Now, the way we could look at that is, A, there's probably going to be more tourists coming into Britain because of the weaker pound against a lot of currencies. Think America, for example. It's a good time for Americans to come over to Britain. Mm-hmm. And also, it might have another shot in the arm for tourism in this country because people might choose to holiday at home. So that is the kind of upshot of that story. They have picked Travelzoo, 5 destinations, which still offer value, but they're saying you're going to have to think outside the box.
Where?
Well, one of the options is Cape Town, actually, in South Africa, because the pound is actually still doing pretty good against the rand there. So if you go out and you go to some of the poshest bits of Cape Town, you can get a good 5-course meal for £20-30. That's what I've been told by friends that have gone out there. It's become quite a popular spot for people to go to.
But surely with rising oil prices, it'll cost quite a lot to fly out.
Well, you say that, but actually flights to South Africa have got a little bit better in the last few years. There's more competition going that way. I've got a few friends that actually have South African partners or South African themselves and have said, actually, it's become a little bit cheaper to get flights out. And a lot of that is due to competition. A couple of other places that I can't really pronounce. I'm going to say this, Ljubljana, Slovenia. Ljubljana. Yeah, I knew Simon would be better.
I've been to Ljubljana.
Is it a nice place to visit?
I'm sure you've
said
that before.
Really nice. Yeah,
so
really good.
That makes the list. Oman, Colombo in Sri Lanka, and a place called Tivat in Montenegro. And I've heard that Montenegro is a very beautiful place to go, and EasyJet have just started flying there. So that's what they're saying, to look outside the box if you can, and maybe not just think about France and Spain next year because prices look like they're going to go up.
All right then, not just France, Spain, or indeed Italy. Linking it back to Prosecco, you have huge glasses of sparkling something or other, and I can actually guarantee that it's all Prosecco. Really, I didn't think I would be able to do that, but actually I can. So what did we make of it, Simon? Your thoughts, please, about anything stick out particularly? Anything just tastes really nasty?
I think A was very sweet.
Yeah?
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of that. I thought C had the right sort of taste for a Prosecco. All right. In my mind, I prefer a little bit more of a bitterness, a little bit more of a sharpness in my sparkling wine.
Lee, yeah. For you.
First of all, I appreciate the glass. It does give you a much better way to sort of taste the Prosecco instead of out of a plastic cup, which sort of took me back to my uni days. And going back to sort of even earlier than my uni days, A was the definite loser there. It tasted a little bit like Lambrusco or Lambrini or something. It wasn't very nice at all. I'd have to go for B, actually, again. Yeah, that was nice.
So back to your uni days, what was that? Couple of weeks ago. Rich, for you, your favourite and your least?
Oh gosh, have you heard of this thing called prison wine that the prisoners make in the cisterns in the toilet? I think
no.
I think C tasted a bit like that.
Wow, okay. I'm assuming that's your least favourite then, yeah? All right.
B was best. I don't, as a rule, drink this stuff, so this was purely on what it tasted like. And so I'm right, B's best, C's worst.
Fantastic. So you are listening to our Christmas taste test special. So far we've had a Stilton starter and we've cracked open the bubbles, and coming up with a degree of trepidation, I offer something allegedly turkey-based and sprouts.
This is Money, brought to you in partnership with NSandI.com, helping you keep on top of your savings whenever, wherever.
Christmas food shopping. I'm going to buy a turkey crown from Sainsbury's and have a very, very frugal Christmas.
So how much will you be spending?
Ooh, probably not more than about £40 on the actual meal for Christmas Day. You know what? There's just too much spending out there. It's really quite nice just to kick back and say, I'm not going to splurge.
I think we're going to go food shopping in Morrison's or Sainsbury's. I think we'll be looking to spend on in the region of, I know, £100 to £150, I reckon.
Well, I'm going to my sister's for Christmas, so I'm probably going to buy minimum amount of stuff as I can. So hopefully somebody else is cooking. Normally at Christmas, I probably spend about £250. I tend to go to different places. I like to go to Marks and Spencer's to get some of the luxury stuff, or Waitrose, But I would buy the basics in somewhere like Morrison's or Sainsbury's.
I'll order everything catering in. I couldn't be bothered cooking this year, so someone else will be cooking. Probably around £200 for five. Waitrose catering, because I had before for parties, but this time we decided to do Christmas as well. Everything looks quite delicious, so hopefully it will be the best we had so far.
I'm doing it with my brother and sister-in-law and their kids, so we kind of divvy up between the two of us who buys what. Bearing in mind there's about 10 of us, I would have thought it would be somewhere in the region of £500 or £600 easily. Meat's always from butchers, vegetables and stuff maybe from main supermarkets, but other bits, wine and stuff, I'll go to independent sort of wine retailers.
Some views of some Share Radio listeners. I'm Georgie Frost. Joining me in the studio is editor Simon Lambert, consumer affairs editor Lee Boyce, and special guest web guru, just general guru, Rich Browning. To round up the week's top stories they've been covering on their financial website of the year. Oh, and taste a few sprouts as well. Welcome to This Is Money and Share Radio podcast in partnership with NS&I. It is time for our main course. We have a feast of sprouts, cranberry sauce, and some sort of turkey derivative, although, as the gents have pointed out, there's also some sort of sprout derivative as well there. Apologies, Rich. I know you weren't a big fan of our turkey ham offering last year, but I'm afraid it was that or risk E. coli from my attempts at cooking actual turkey. But while Rich turns his nose up at our offerings, let's turn our attention to my least favourite subject, house price figures. Almost like you're teasing me. You have a whole article comparing the latest. So to get my own back, I offer you first sprouts and our Annie with some fun Christmas dinner facts.
The cost of Christmas dinner this year has been put at £64.25 for six people, or £10.71 per person. It takes about 295 days to make our dinner before it reaches our plate, as it needs 10 months to sow and grow. The average Brit will gain up to half a stone over the festive period.
Okay, so that was our Annie with some fun Christmas dinner facts. Simon, we're going to come to you. What have you tried? Did you try the sprouts first, or did you go for a bit of cranberry sauce, or did you go for the turkey?
I thought I'd get the sprouts out of the way, actually.
All right, let's go with sprouts first, then.
Well, I should caveat this with the fact that I'm not the greatest tester of sprouts, because I can't stand them.
You hate them, exactly, so you're the perfect person to try them. Yeah,
yeah. So D was my winner.
I just want to know the flavours you're getting through. Okay, yeah. So, especially the one that looks sort of brown.
No offence, but that was pretty soggy and horrible. A different colour to the others as well. Murky. Prison sprouts, I think. Whereas I think D's pretty plump, actually.
Okay.
D is plumper than C or B. Actually, I preferred that plumper sprout.
Okay. Well, I'm surprised you didn't like the prison ones, because you rather liked the wine prison toilet water that Rich compared it to. That was your favourite. But we're not going to talk about sprouts now. Simon, before we get to the latest hotspot, you got your own back. So I revealed last week that my most hated subject ever... Well, no, it's not really ever, but it's house price figures. You get so many of them, so you've decided to pull them all together and take a look at them. What did you find? Which report do we believe?
You can believe all of them or none of them, depending on how you want to position yourself.
They don't say the same thing.
Well, they sort of say broadly the same thing. So the thing you've got to remember about house price figures is that they're all measured in different ways. Mm. So this week we had the Rightmove house price figures, and those are based on asking prices. Asking prices of property newly listed on its website. And it says that those are up 3.4% this year. And the average is just a shade under £300,000. And it forecasts that they were going to rise by less next year, that they were going to rise by only 2%. And in fact, they were going to fall in central London, rise in outer London. So you're seeing this divide emerge. But then also we had the ONS house price figures, and they lag a month behind the other major indices. But they are a combination of the old ONS house price index and the Old Land Registry Index. They're based on the prices people actually pay for property. And then there's some statistical analysis, just to chuck that in to make sure you do go to sleep, Georgie. Some statistical analysis that's done on the size of the property and things like that to try and give the best estimate. They said house prices are up 7% over the past year. It's quite a big difference between 7% and 3%, isn't there? Mm. And then you've got the Halifax and Nationwide, and they're knocking around 5 or 6% rises. The general trend, however, is that annual house price inflation is slowing down, and the general forecast is that it will continue to slow down into next year. However, there will be some standout areas, as I believe we may be about to come to.
Well, I understand. Yes, there are latest hotspots. Lee looks up at me, so I'm going to go to you. Who are they?
Basildon.
I love that. You laugh before it.
Basildon and Slough. And yep. I actually live about 10 minutes away from Basildon. Mm-hmm. And there's been much humour, especially on sort of my Facebook page with friends that have grown up in the South End Basildon area, that Basildon, it now costs more than £300,000 for the average property in Basildon.
I assume it's ironic humour.
Yeah, it's ironic humour because it's almost unbelievable that that's happened. But in fairness to Basildon, it is a town on the up. It was one of those places that was built from nothing after the Second World War, so it's a bit of a concrete jungle. Mm. But they have invested quite a bit of money, especially revamping the high street and the town square there. And also, there's some big businesses about to move there. So
does it have a Waitrose, though?
It probably does now. Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. But yeah. I would say, Costa Coffee are about to build... Well, they are building at the moment their roastery there. It's going to roast every single coffee being...
Moving it from
London because of the link to Tilbury Docks. It's quite close from Basildon to Tilbury. So there's stuff going on there. So even though I've always called it Basildump, sorry, citizens of Basildon, I'm Bas Vegas. It's a place on the up. And there's a lot of places like this in this southeast now, especially away from the southern train line, where people are actually looking where they can buy, get to London and get a much bigger place than they can in London, but with an easy commute. Basildon to London is about half an hour, and it's a similar distance from Slough, I believe. So a lot of it's like a ripple effect. Mm-hmm. So as people set up, make massive money in London from a house or property they might have bought in Zone 3, 4, 5, etc., they can see how much bigger property they can get outside. It's the whole ripple effect, and it's going on towns all around the periphery. Luton, lots of towns that have always been a little bit underloved, shall we say, and they seem to be booming.
So there are winners and there are losers to property. We've been speaking about soaring property prices. Indeed, in October, the average property was £14,000 more expensive than just a year ago. And it seems it was ever thus, doesn't it? But it wasn't. Back in the 90s, no one knew exactly how quickly property prices would rise. Certainly hasn't benefited some homeowners, namely those who sold shared appreciation mortgages. And This Is Money has waged war. Who is going to tell me what they are? Simon?
Shared appreciation mortgages are a bad deal if you took one out. But they probably didn't seem such a bad deal at the time, because they were sold to people as a way of helping to fund their retirement. They were sort of an early form of equity release, which is where people pull money out of their house to help fund their retirement. And if you think back to the late 1990s, it seems strange to imagine that now, but basically house prices hadn't risen. They'd gone nowhere since the start of the 90s. You had the house price crash at the start of the 90s. And people certainly weren't expecting the kind of stratospheric house price inflation that we then saw in the following years. And basically houses were actually, you know, fairly cheap. They were decent value. But people who took out these mortgages with mainly Bank Barclays or Bank of Scotland, the structure of it was that they took some money out of their house, so they took a loan, chunk of their house. Say, for example, you took a loan of £30,000, but then you didn't pay interest on that. In some cases you did, but mainly you didn't pay interest on that. But you gave up 75% of the rise in value of your property, future rise in value of your property. And when you sold it, you had to hand that over to the bank. Now, of course, we all know what's happened to house prices since 1997. They went completely bonkers. And then we've done everything we possibly could within our grasp to prop them up since 2007. And so you've got people who are now pretty elderly, people in their, you know, their 80s, who don't need to be living in these big houses anymore. They'd rather move somewhere else. But if they move somewhere else, they owe the bank hundreds of thousands of pounds for a debt that when they took it out was only a couple of £10,000. And our mortgage reporter, Sarah Davidson, has been doing a lot of work on this over the past few months. We've been campaigning on it because we think that the banks should really be probably doing these people a favour.
This is a really serious issue because you've highlighted some cases of some elderly, very vulnerable people.
Yeah, we had one woman who basically feels trapped in her home. But the sentiment that comes through all of this is people telling us that they feel trapped in their home. Because the problem is yes, their house is worth lots more than they paid for it. And yes, they will actually get some of that money because they still own a chunk of it. But because property prices have gone up by so much, they can't afford to buy another place to live because they borrowed £30,000 from the bank and now they owe the bank £200,000 or £300,000. And you wouldn't be able to sell these loans nowadays. People had to take financial advice to get them, but the standard of financial advice back then, you know, we're talking about an era when people were still being flogged missold endowments by the bucket load.
So what are you
calling
for?
I don't think the standard of financial advice was very, very good. And, you know, how much commission were the advisors earning? So I think that really what we'd like to see is the banks, you know, they don't have to let people off this money completely, but just negotiate a position that says, yeah, actually, we've profited beyond our wildest dreams. We never expected house prices to go up by this much. You could never have expected house prices to go up by this much. Here's a sum of money. You pay us this. We'll release you from it. It leaves them with the bulk or at least 50% of the value of their home, and they can move themselves somewhere else. And don't forget that this is a banking system that was propped up by the taxpayer after it almost sent itself bust on a widespread scale in 2007. And I think that, you know, considering the fact that there aren't that many of these loans around and that these banks have benefited directly or indirectly from the support of other people, that it's time for them to say, look, okay, we'll do the decent thing.
The banks,
yeah.
Be fair, do the decent thing. All right, fair enough. Yeah, absolutely right. Okay, we're going to leave that to one side. I saw, Lee, you flapping, I think it's some turkey. We did call it turkey derivative in the air a little bit earlier. So we're going to go to your scores on the doors, please. Lee, to you first. Let's go with a bit of turkey. What stood out for you? What did you like? What did you look for in a good piece of turkey derivative?
Well, exactly. That's why I was giving it a flap mid-air, because there was two standouts there, and I just wanted to see sort of texture and the way it held up and the way it looked in the light, and
standouts being the good ones, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, wow. So in the end, I've gone. It was a tough choice because D looks more attractive, but I've actually gone for B on taste. It doesn't look quite as nice. It hasn't got the edge on it, but it looks very, very good. So B, and easily the worst is A, because I'm not actually convinced that's turkey. It looks a bit grey, a bit pinky grey actually, and. Yeah, no. Just looking at it now after drinking a little bit more Prosecco, it's making me feel a little bit funny.
Keep drinking and it might look better. Rich, for you?
D has been dead for far too long. A, though, the one that Lily disliked the most, is extraordinary. It's just it's squidgy and...
For the joys of radio, that's not working. I'm just going to go for A and D for you because Tom's going to do the proper scoring. I'm just giggling at what you're saying. Simon, for you, please, turkey.
Well, A and D look the most turkey-like of the turkey hams that we are eating. And I thought that actually... No, sorry, B and D look the most turkey-like. A certainly doesn't look turkey-like. A looks just like ham. I went actually with D. I preferred D.
Okay,
whereas
your least favourite?
I'm the sort of opposite of Lee there.
Least favourite is...
Yeah, A.
Bit of cranberry?
It's just ham, isn't
it? Rich, you were looking forward to the cranberry. What were your thoughts? Speed through this, because we've got some mince pies for Lee to try.
I'm surprised at the different colours that they've managed to come up with in the cranberry and the different tastes. They're all nice and bitter, apart from one that was way too sweet, which was C for the listeners out there. So, yeah.
Any of the sprouts? You like the sort of grey-looking one,
I hope they're the tinned ones. They taste of bread. They're amazing.
They taste bread. Okay. But for you, Lee...
If we're going to talk cranberry, I mean, there's two, again, standouts. One of them actually looks like it's got cranberries in, so that's always a good start. But I've actually gone for B on taste. I thought A and C were a little bit jam-like. They were quite sweet and not what I'd like with my turkey. And in terms of sprouts, I mean, Georgie, I need to teach you how to cook some sprouts, man. I mean, you need to take off the outer shell because
right.
That's the bitter part.
All right, enough of that.
And then they need to be boiled for about 6 to 8 minutes.
Yeah. There we go. And do you know what? It's perfect time now for our final course, just to get my own back on you, Lee. Yes. I know you're looking forward to this because you're a big mince pie fan. What perfect timing. We've got Waitrose, Tesco, Aldi and our wild card, but here is our Annie for the final time.
They actually used to be savoury,
Mincemeat mixed with alcohol, fruits and spices to help preserve it. As time went on, they became sweeter until the mince was removed altogether, but the name stayed. You must always stir clockwise when making mince pies, or it's bad luck. But if you eat one each day over the 12 days of Christmas, it brings good luck for the year ahead.
There you go, Lee. If you eat one a day over the 12 days of Christmas, it's good luck. Yeah, you're loving it, aren't you? Your face, you've gone a bit red, Lee. You've gone a bit red. He's not a big mince pie fan. So while I get your views on the mince pies, just a quick one. Rich, I'm just intrigued to know what on earth you think it might taste like. Anything related to mince pie or...
Well, nobody on earth knows what mince is made of, do they? So some of these taste a bit of apple.
Yeah, okay.
A couple are far too sweet. I just want everybody listening out there to understand that we are doing this properly, stuffing our faces with mince pies.
You are. I'm taking photographic evidence of it. But I want to ask, while we end our festive taste test, and Lee is looking a bit bleary-eyed there, so stay with us, Lee, stay with us. I want to talk about what a year it's been for the supermarkets. Now, Simon, you said last year, Dave Lewis, Tesco, you're on your way back, son, I think was your quote, after what's been a pretty troubled time. Did that continue through this year? Did the German discounters continue to blitzkrieg their way through the industry? Did newspaper and coffee loyalty gate impact our love for Waitrose? Now, we've been reading we're likely to spend more on supermarket premium own label ranges this year, or we have been, according to Kantar data. But it comes against that backdrop, doesn't it, of a continued slow growth for the sector. So, Simon, wrap up the year for the supermarkets.
Well, I said, Dave Lewis, you're on your way back. Tesco's share price, £1.43 this time last year. Today, £2.04. That is a 43% rise. Not bad. Although it should be worth noted that this time last year was pretty much the low point for Tesco and its share price. And actually, things have got better for Tesco. It's had the well-publicised row with Unilever over Marmite.
Marmite Gate, yep.
Where it was seen to be standing up for the customer, the food in the shop has got better. It's appealing to people a bit more. You're more likely to go in there and find some inspiration for dinner. I still think it's got issues going up against the German discounters, who have still continued to gain ground, actually, on the big supermarkets. But that's been less of a story. The supermarket that's actually struggled a bit this year has been Sainsbury's. Sainsbury's had been a winner.
It was a surprise. What's gone on there?
Literally, I think it's just a game of swings and roundabouts.
Mm. And such small margins.
And because Sainsbury's hadn't been suffering as much, when the others started to come back a little bit, it just made Sainsbury's look a bit bad. Sainsbury's, of course, has taken over Argos. And that is one to watch because that is a big move. It likes the look of Argos's delivery stuff. So Argos is the one shop that's totally nailed this order it online, pick it up in the shop, even get it delivered to your door same day. And that's what Sainsbury's wants, and it wants to move the Argos concessions into its store. And the other wild card supermarket success of the year, Morrison's. Under a certain ex-Tesco man, David Potts, who has come in, reinvigorated what was a bit of a basket case of a business. And Morrison's shares are also up substantially, but I do not have the figure in front of me.
I do remember, and I was going to ask you, Lee, are you still with us after the mince pies? How are you feeling?
I am. I'm fine.
Good.
I braced myself for it.
Okay, great. We did predict that maybe a big player might collapse last year, and the word on everyone's lips was Morrison's. Mm-hmm. What's going on there?
Do you know what? I went to Morrison's last weekend. We got one fairly close to us, and it had been a while since I've been in there. But that is an example of a supermarket that's doing things a little bit better, in my opinion. I thought the fresh meat, especially that it had, was laid out well. It was really good quality. The one supermarket, I'm not, you know, this is not me saying a supermarket's going to go under, but one supermarket that has been pulled up in this as having a bit of a poor year, and I must admit, the last couple of times I've gone in there, I wish I went to any other supermarket, is Asda. There's something going on there where I don't like its sort of fruit, veg and meat offering. And I don't know if it's just me. I like to try them all out. I don't have a specific one I go to. We've got them all in the area. Try them all time to time, you know, put my This Is Money hat on. And it's when a lot of the produce isn't coming from Britain. Now I sound like, oh, yeah, vote for Brexit, all that sort of stuff. But actually, I much prefer it when fruit and veg does come from Britain. We've got abundance of it. Why am I getting stuff sent from elsewhere? So I think that's one to sort of keep your eyes on. And I think Morrison's has definitely improved, as has Tesco.
Which leads us on nicely, but I'm so sorry, Lee. I was slightly distracted there. Simon's just wrapped up What is that? Mince pies with Brussels sprouts. Look, Simon, we'll give you a doggy bag if you want to take them home. Don't worry about it. We've got tons out there. It's okay. But now the results are ready. We are ready to give you the score. And it's the moment that really no one's been waiting for, but it'd be rude not to, quite simply. The winner and loser of our festive taste test, overall on price from Waitrose, Tesco, Lidl, and the wild card pick. I should actually tell you what the wild card was, but the winner in terms of price was Lidl. I won't bore you with the details, but I worked out like 100 grams and for six and all that sort of jazz. But Lidl, £8.24 in total. Tesco, very close to Lidl it was last year. It was a matter of pennies. They're £12.16. Wildcard in at £16.35. And finally, Waitrose at £16.50. So Wildcard and Waitrose very closely there. Tesco upping its price a little bit, but the results are in on taste, to which I hand over to our waiter slash producer, Tom.
It's tense. So first up, we have the cheese, and the winner here actually is Tesco with 4 points. At the bottom of the list for this one was the wild card on 12 points. Moving on to the turkey, the winner here was actually Lidl, and the loser was Tesco. Next up, we have the cranberry. The winner here was the wild card, in fact, and bottom of the list, Lidl. The sprouts, this is a bit tougher, joint bottom on this one between the wild card and Waitrose, surprisingly. So I assume the wild card was probably the sort of slightly inhuman dark grey ones we had there. The winner here actually was Lidl for the sprouts, though.
Okay.
And then for the Prosecco, we've got a joint winner here. It's tied between Waitrose and Lidl, and coming bottom of the list is the wild card, our local corner shop. And for the mince pies, the local shop clawed it back a bit here. The wild card was the clear favourite for the mince pies, and bottom of the list was Tesco.
Well, you've totally revealed it in an unspectacular fashion that the wild card was indeed the corner shop at Pimlico, because let's be honest, we've always forgotten something, haven't we? So overall, on taste, Tom, add it all together, who was the winner, who was the loser?
So I think actually here, Lidl seems to have come top in most of the foodstuffs.
That'll do for me. Lidl, most of the foodstuff, Lidl on price as well. And I also should point out, by the way, that those, I want to say olive colour, but I think it's more brown, Brussels sprouts were a gift to me in June. Were they not, Rich Browning? From your good self. As my Christmas present.
It all makes sense now.
It was a Christmas present for either last Christmas or this one.
Oh,
but the great thing about those is they last until...
No, they don't look
not
at
next
them.
Year, but the Christmas after that.
They're
is the
decomposing in that pot.
Giving. Thank you very much to editor Simon Lambert, Consumer Affairs editor Lee Boyce, and our special guest, Rich Browning, for you and your sprouts. A very Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.